Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
In 2022, Columbia University celebrated its most competitive admission cycle to date. Over 40,000 students applied for undergraduate spots, and fewer than 6% made the cut. The reason for this unprecedented surge might have had something to do with the school's most recent accolade. U.S. News and World Report had just named Columbia the second best university in the country, right behind Princeton and tied with Harvard. But just as Columbia's new freshman class settled into campus, a shocking revelation surfaced. Their university admitted that it had cheated its way to the top. I'm Margot Gray. This week on Campus Files, we explore the extraordinary measures that universities will take to climb the college rankings. Think about the last time you bought something. A vacuum cleaner, a mattress, maybe a water bottle. Chances are, you did a little research, sifted through brands, and tried to find the best option out there.
Well, I suppose we are a competitive society, and we are very much a consumerist society, and many of us are status seekers. So all of those things contribute to this preoccupation with rankings that you see almost everywhere in our society.
This is Colin Diver, author of Breaking Ranks, How the Rankings Industry Rules Higher Education and What to Do About It. He also served as the dean of the University of Pennsylvania Law School and as president of Reed College.
We want to know whether we're buying good products, whether we're going to vacation in good places, and of course, whether we are sending our kids to good schools.
Few investments feel as significant as choosing a college. It's a decision with long-term consequences, one that shapes careers, friendships, and future opportunities. With so much at stake, it's only natural to want to make the best possible choice. But with thousands of universities to consider, the decision is anything but easy.
Going back to the beginning of the 20th century, from time to time, people thought, gee, there ought to be a ranking of schools. So they would come up with something and they would do it for a year or two and then they would abandon it. But none of them were anywhere near like the systematic, ongoing annual rankings that started with the U.S. News rankings.
In 1983, U.S. News and World Report stepped in to fill the void, releasing its first ever ranking of the best colleges. The methodology was rudimentary, to say the least. The magazine sent a survey to university presidents, asking them to name up to 10 schools they believed offered the best undergraduate education. U.S. News then tallied the votes and published the results, declaring Stanford the best national university and Amherst the best national liberal arts college.
You might say, well, that was pretty unscientific and pretty subjective, but a lot of schools suddenly took these very seriously. My own college, Amherst College, ordered something like 25,000 copies of the U.S. News ranking, which said that they were number one among liberal arts colleges, and sent them out to all the students who were thinking of applying to Amherst.
The rankings quickly became a lifeline for the struggling U.S. News and World Report magazine. When schools like Amherst boasted about their top spot, it turned into free advertising for U.S. News. And the editors realized they could attract even more attention by making their methodology seem more sophisticated. They began sending out lengthy questionnaires to colleges, asking for a range of statistics, things like graduation rates and the average SAT scores of enrolled students.
But the interesting thing was that in those days, colleges were not being required to report as many statistics to the government as they are now. So it was quite a big imposition on the schools to fill out these questionnaires every year. But in spite of that, these colleges all did fill it out and submitted them to U.S. News. So that is another indication that they took them very seriously.
Based on all these different statistics, U.S. News then had to create a formula to measure the quality of an institution.
First, they had to decide which of these variables to use in their formula. But then they had to come up with weights to assign to these different factors so that they could combine them all into a single metric.
In other words, U.S. News had to decide which factors define the quality of an institution and how much each of those factors should matter. For example, if a school has a top-tier engineering department but a subpar humanities program, or has a massive endowment but limited campus space, how should all of that be weighed?
Higher educational institutions are enormously complex. When you think about it, they are providing a hugely complicated product, a life experience that's a whole range of educational experiences, but also social experiences, food and housing, entertainment. It seems to me way, way too complicated to reduce to a single ranking.
As if assessing the quality of a single institution wasn't challenging enough, U.S. News set out to rank more than 1,400 schools against one another, lining them up on a single scale from best to worst.
These schools vary enormously in their character and in their mission, in their history. There are huge research universities. There are athletic factory universities. There are small colleges that specialize in the liberal arts. There are engineering schools. It's a little bit like saying we're going to have a single ranking for all appliances, and we'll just throw in stoves and vacuum cleaners and refrigerators. It would make no sense. But in some ways, that's exactly what the college rankings are purporting to do.
So was U.S. News up to the Herculean task? Well, in 1997, the magazine hired an outside consultancy to review its ranking methodology, and the feedback wasn't exactly glowing. The consultancy concluded, "The principal weakness of the current approach is that the weights used to combine the various measures into an overall rating lack any defensible, empirical, or theoretical basis." In simpler terms, the magazine's supposedly scientific formula was largely arbitrary. But that didn't stop U.S. News. Instead, that same year, the magazine blasted out its rankings online for the first time.
That was a big event because it expanded from the tens of thousands to the millions, the number of people that looked at their rankings. It also, of course, reached an international audience, which was very important, because a lot of foreign students want to attend American universities.
With each year, the rankings reached larger and larger audiences, shaping opinions not just across the U.S., but across the world. And the rankings proved to have real-world consequences. Studies have shown that a school's ranking can directly impact application numbers, yield rates, and even the average standardized test scores of incoming students. So university administrators, whatever their personal feelings on the rankings, have a strong incentive to climb the list.
When I was the dean of the University of Pennsylvania Law School, I felt as though I was a captive to the rankings. Everybody in legal education was complying with U.S. News's rankings, paying slavish attention to them.
Penn Law didn't just pay attention to the rankings. They adapted their admissions process in a deliberate attempt to improve their standing.
U.S. News was ranking law schools, and still is, by giving a fairly heavy weight to the average LSAT score of the incoming students. And we used to use that factor, of course, but we didn't give it as much weight. We tried to factor in less quantitative, more qualitative measures. And we found that because we were doing that, it affected our rankings. So I confessed, and I confessed in the book, that we ended up changing the relative weights we gave to the various factors in admission for that reason.
It's worth pausing to acknowledge how shocking it is that one of the country's most prestigious law schools adjusted its admissions process based on a single magazine's ranking metrics. But Penn Law is hardly alone.
I think that virtually everybody in higher education, if they're honest about it, would admit that they've changed their policies or their practices or their priorities to some extent in order to look better in the rankings.
But there's an even quicker way to move up the ladder. Misreport the data to U.S. News and World Report. And that's exactly what Columbia University did. June is here, which means it's finally time to reach for your summer wardrobe. And if you're trying to look good without overheating, Quince is your best bet. Their summer collection has all the warm weather staples: breathable linen, washable silk, and soft organic cotton. I now own their 100% linen pants in more colors than I'd like to admit. And the best part is that you get all that quality without the luxury markup. Everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Quince works directly with ethical factories and cuts out the middlemen, so you're paying for quality, not brand markup. And it's not just clothing. Quince has become a destination for elevated essentials across the home, from kitchen to bedding, making it easy to bring a more premium feel into everyday life. Elevate your summer wardrobe. Go to quince.com/campus for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's quince.com/campus for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/campus.
I hear a lot from people that there are days where it's hard to read a single news story. Forget actually being caught up. But I host a podcast that can fix that. It's called The Seven. Seven stories every weekday by 7 a.m. Eastern. And here's the other thing. It's short, less than 10 minutes, in fact. I'm Hannah Jewell. The Seven podcast will turn around your morning and get you caught up. Check it out and follow The Seven wherever you listen to podcasts.
In 2021, Columbia University had big news to celebrate. For the past decade, U.S. News and World Report had ranked the university at number 4 or number 5. But this year, Columbia climbed to the coveted number 2 spot out of nearly 400 national universities. The university's dean of undergraduate admissions enthusiastically wrote on the university website, "Columbia is proud of all the factors that led U.S. News and World Report to see us as one of the best universities in the world. We have been working on every level to support our students and are proud to be recognized for this."
The fact that they were number 2 raised, if not alarm bells, at least it raised my eyebrows.
This is Michael Thaddeus. He's been a math professor at Columbia since 1998.
That was actually the first teaching position that I ever had. I've never taught a course at any other university besides Columbia.
If Thaddeus knows two things very well, it's Columbia University and numbers. And the number 2 ranking wasn't sitting right with him.
2 meant that we were tied with Harvard and MIT, that we were surpassed only by Princeton in this ranking. And I knew that we at Columbia have certain objective disadvantages compared to those other schools. We have a smaller endowment. We have far less physical space, for example. So even though my admiration for Columbia is boundless, I think this is a wonderful institution. I've chosen to be here my entire career. I knew that we faced certain inherent disadvantages when it came to a linear ranking.
Thaddeus wanted to understand what had driven Columbia's rise in the rankings. So he subscribed to U.S. News and World Report to access the specific data Columbia had self-reported. For instance, Columbia claimed that 82.5% of its courses had fewer than 20 students, meaning a large majority of courses were seminar style. From his experience of more than 2 decades at the school, Thaddeus was skeptical. So he set about calculating the percentage himself.
This took me several days of hard work. I took the Directory of Classes, which is a website that lists every class in the university together with its enrollment, and I just downloaded the HTML code of all of those web pages, concatenated them all together, and I arrived at figures that were very, very different from what Columbia had reported.
Thaddeus found that the real number was far lower than the reported 82.5%. The correct figure was below 67%. As he kept crunching the numbers, more discrepancies emerged. Columbia had reported a student-to-faculty ratio of 6 to 1, but Thaddeus's calculations suggested it was closer to 11 to 1. Then came one of the most startling claims. Columbia reported spending over $3 billion on instruction and teaching-related expenses per year. That would mean, according to his calculations, that Columbia was spending more than $100,000 per student annually.
$3 billion was, at the time at least, more than the total amount that Harvard, Yale, and Princeton put together reported that they spend on instruction. It's literally the single largest figure reported by any university.
How did Columbia arrive at this $3 billion figure? Thaddeus has a theory.
The money that Columbia doctors spends on patient care, which is obviously a ton of money because it's a large operation involving hundreds of doctors, all of that was being inaccurately described as an instructional expense.
The list of discrepancies continued to grow. Graduation rates, the percentage of full-time faculty, and the share of professors with PhDs or other terminal degrees, all misrepresented by Columbia. Eventually, Thaddeus compiled his findings into a 21-page report. At the very top, he included a quote from Colin Diver, who we heard from earlier in the episode. "Rankings create powerful incentives to manipulate data and distort institutional behavior."
I thought about trying to approach some magazine or something and publish an article in a magazine. I decided not to do that because if you look at what I wrote, it's a weird mixture of different genres. It's partly academic report, it's partly journalism, and it's partly a polemic.
Instead, Thaddeus decided to upload the analysis to his website. And in February 2022, he hit submit.
You know that thing where you get an amazing pair of shoes at a really great price and want to tell everyone about it? Yeah, so do we. Here at Designer Shoe Warehouse, we'll give you something to brag about. Like the latest styles from brands you love, or the trends everyone's obsessing over, or shoes that make you feel like, well, you. So go ahead, show off a little. Find shoes that get you at prices that get your budget. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today. DSW, let us surprise you.
In February 2022, Michael Thaddeus published his findings under the title, "An Investigation of the Facts Behind Columbia's U.S. News Ranking."
That I decided just to post my report on my webpage, which is not exactly a high traffic location. They're mostly only math faculty and students who ever looked at it. But I figured the claims I'm making were so provocative that eventually someone will take notice.
But he was wrong. Very few people took notice. So Thaddeus had to reach out to the media himself. He contacted the student paper, the Columbia Daily Spectator.
They realized that me even saying that there might be a problem was something that was worthy of coverage, even if my claims hadn't been peer-reviewed or appeared in any other publication. And they wrote a story about it. And that very, very slowly started the ball rolling.
In March 2022, following the Columbia Daily Spectator coverage, national outlets began picking up the story. Publications like the New York Times and Wall Street Journal.
It's one of these things that growth was maybe exponential. First, it happened very slowly, and then it happened very suddenly.
The latest scandal began when a math professor who works at Columbia called into question his own employer's statistics that it had submitted to U.S. News & World Report, saying he found...
Thaddeus suspects that the report attracted even more attention because he wasn't an outside whistleblower, but a tenured professor exposing issues at his own institution. For Thaddeus, this wasn't exactly new territory. He had a history of challenging Columbia's administration on a range of issues, from the presence of ROTC on campus to the mismanagement of the endowment. Some would say, as the New York Times put it, he has a hobby of provoking his employer.
That expression has stuck to me, and I will own it, but I don't see it as a hobby because I don't actually find it enjoyable at all. I don't like being pugnacious for its own sake. I have no personal animus against people in the administration. That's not the point.
The point, he says, is to push the administration to be more transparent in how it operates and to take accountability when it makes mistakes.
there's a pattern of conduct in my central administration that's just extremely troubling, that when bad things come to light, the university doesn't candidly address them. It doesn't openly discuss what the problems are. You might hope, oh, the more scandals you expose, the more you'll sort of pry open this kernel of secrecy. Right now, it just seems to be the opposite. Like, the worse the scandals get, the more our central administration hunkers down.
That's exactly what happened after Thaddeus published his report, Silence from the Administration.
I kind of thought that the issues that I raised would open a dialogue with the administration, where the administration would have said, well, this is why we reported these figures. This is what we meant by these figures. Nothing like that has ever happened. They obviously were very concerned about their legal liability, and so it was just like this iron curtain of silence descending. So I reached out to the provost, and I said, could we have a discussion about it?
Thaddeus had a one-hour Zoom meeting with the president, provost, and several other faculty members.
Someone who was present at that meeting, you know, described it as an infomercial, and I think that just about sums it up. The provost spoke in general terms about how she was confident that the figures were accurate. That was the position of the university, is that the figures are broadly accurate.
When he asked about specific figures, like the supposed $3 billion spent on instruction, he hit a wall. Most of his questions similarly went unanswered.
We still have no idea in practical terms who actually was responsible for gathering the data, who assembled the data, who filled out the survey form. Was it one person or many people? What offices of the university are they in? I would have loved to engage with those people, talk to them, but that was the only time ever that I had any kind of public dialogue with anyone in the central administration.
The university couldn't bury its head in the sand forever. In July, U.S. News announced that Columbia would be temporarily removed from the rankings until the release of the next year's list, meaning it was losing its coveted number two spot. That same summer, two Columbia students filed class action lawsuits against the university, accusing it of deceiving students by falsifying data.
Some students at Columbia University say the U.S. News and World Report college ranking was an important factor in their decision to attend the school.
Looking at ranking.
Then, in the fall of 2022, U.S. News released its latest annual rankings. Columbia had plummeted from number 2 to number 18, the lowest ranking of any Ivy League school, and its worst position since first appearing on the list in 1988. Thaddeus wasn't happy about his school being embarrassed, but he did welcome the increased scrutiny of the rankings process.
The fallout of the commotion has been that I think there's been a permanent change in how people think about university rankings in general. And there's a much broader sense of public skepticism about whether the rankings are meaningful or helpful. That's all extremely positive. I think people should take these rankings with a grain of salt. I mean, no, with a heaping teaspoon of salt. They mean almost nothing, and I'm glad people have woken up to that.
Columbia's sharp drop highlighted just how easily the rankings could be manipulated. As Thaddeus told the New York Times, if any institution can drop from number 2 to number 18 in a single year, it just discredits the entire ranking system.
There's just no way to measure the quality of what happens in the classroom without going into the classroom. Besides, everyone's opinion about what's a good education differs anyway. What makes a university good? That's so complicated. There's so many different cross-cutting factors and reasons.
But if the rankings are so flawed and more people are recognizing those flaws, why do they stick around? Thaddeus believes one reason is that they help prospective students feel more confident about their decisions.
Anxious young people are just relieved of the need to make a decision for themselves. You just apply to 5 colleges, and then you choose the one that appears the highest in the ranking. There's a sense of comfort that comes from that. There's a sense of ease. But there's also just something mesmerizing about it. There is something fascinating about a horse race.
Finally, and maybe most importantly, Thaddeus thinks the rankings persist because of what they offer to individual college applicants, students, and graduates.
People look to the rankings as validation of the prestige of their own school and therefore, by extension, as validation of their own individual self-worth. if I went to Duke University, say, and Duke University is ranked in the top 10, then I respond to this by thinking, oh, well, then I'm a top 10 kind of person. And if you look at message boards on Reddit or if you read articles in the press, you see this kind of rhetoric all the time. Columbia versus Cornell. Cornell was so happy when Columbia got knocked down the rankings and therefore they surpassed Columbia in the rankings. Oh, last week we were worse than you and suddenly we're better than you. And obviously a lot of people in society crave some kind of validation. They need it. They want to be told that they are prestigious or accomplished or important. And that's really what the rankings are selling.
In June 2023, about a year and a half after Thaddeus published his explosive findings, Columbia University announced that it would no longer participate in the U.S. News and World Report college rankings, making it the first Ivy League institution to opt out. While U.S. News would still rank Columbia, it would now have to source data from elsewhere. In its statement, Columbia explained, "Synthesizing data into a single U.S. News submission for its best college rankings does not adequately account for all of the factors that make our undergraduate programs exceptional." This decision raised concerns for U.S. News. Losing the cooperation of prestigious schools threatened to undermine its credibility and influence. But in the end, fears of a mass exodus never materialized. Elite institutions continued to participate, allowing the rankings to remain a dominant force in college admissions.
I've spent much of the last few years just telling people university rankings are of no value and you should pay no attention to them whatsoever. I often say that to journalists. And then their follow-up question is, well, in light of that, what do you make of Columbia's rise from number 13 to number 12? I think rankings are going to be with us for a long time to come.
Campus Files is an Odyssey original podcast. This episode was written and reported by Margot Gray. Campus Files is produced by Ian Mont, Elliot Adler, and me, Margot Gray. Our executive producers and story editors are Maddie Sprungkaiser and Lloyd Lockridge. Campus Files is edited, mixed, and mastered by Chris Basil and Andy Jaskowitz. Special thanks to Jenna Weiss-Berman, J.D. Crowley, Leah Reese-Dennis, Maura Curran, Josephina Francis, Kurt Courtney, Hilary Schuff, Sean Cherry, Laura Berman, and Hilary Van Ornum. Original theme music by James Waterman and Davey Sumner. If you have tips or story ideas, write to us at campusfilespod@gmail.com.